This morning, we are looking at Genesis chapter 21. We have had during the holiday season a number of special subjects that I've dealt with, but I'd like to come back to Genesis now and look at chapter 21 with Isaac and Ishmael as the center of the theme. Then the Lord took note of Sarah, as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had promised. So Sarah conceived and bore a son to Abraham in his old age, at the appointed time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac. Then Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Now Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. All right, this first paragraph shows us the birth of Isaac. And it is in answer to the definite promise of God. And we note that the name for God is here Jehovah, Lord, those four capital letters, which tells you this is the covenant-keeping God. This is the God who answers His prayers, the prayers of His people. And so, as God had promised, so He does exactly this. And Isaac, who is here born, is going to figure in the narrative now from this chapter all the way to chapter 35. So a big part of this book is going to be woven into the life of Isaac. Now, the word, the name, Isaac, means he laughs. And there's a play on words here as in this paragraph. That Sarah marvels that God has made laughter for her. She thought there was no hope at the advanced age that she was. But that discounts the power of God. Now, there is hope as long as God is involved. And so here, God has made laughter for her. And everyone who hears will rejoice with her. And indeed, this is a matter of rejoicing for all. The name Sarah means princess. And so she is one whose name has been changed. She is going to be the mother of the great king. And so she is known as princess. And this is very interesting that God would deliberately change her name this way. She is a unique woman in Scripture. She is the only woman in the entire Bible whose age is given. God mercifully hides that everywhere else, but there is the exception on that point. But she is a most important lady in the history of God's people. Now, in verse 8, it says, and the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. Now, Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, mocking. Therefore, she said to Abraham, drive out this maid and her son, for the son of this maid shall not be an heir with my son Isaac. And the matter distressed Abraham greatly because of his son. But God said to Abraham, do not be distressed because of the lad and your maid. Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her. For through Isaac your descendants, your seed, shall be named. And of the son of the maid I will make a nation also, because he is your descendant, your seed. Now here is part of the complication that Sarah has brought upon herself. It was her suggestion that her maid, Hagar, be the means by which Abraham could get an heir. And there was an element of unbelief there that God wasn't really going to do what he said he was going to do. And so that's the way it went. And here is the son of Hagar the Egyptian, who, by the way, is not named here, which is rather interesting. It's always the son, the lad, and so on. His name doesn't appear here. But his name, Ishmael, means God hears. And yet Abraham had distinctly interceded in behalf of this personage and asked God for him, and God arranged it. And so God does hear. And Ishmael is the evidence of this. God hears. But he's not named here. And so here's a problem that Sarah faces. Because when this little baby, Isaac, is weaned, and this was not soon in the ancient world, this was after some years, Ishmael shows up on the scene, as verse 9 tells us, mocking. It is a word for the children's jeering, derisive language, and so on. So here he takes some pains to be disrespectful to this heir of the entire estate of Abraham. And Sarah hears, princess as she is, and she is incensed that he would do such a thing to her child. And so she says, drive out this maid and her son. Get rid of them. We don't want them around. Now, Abraham is a very compassionate person. He prayed for Ishmael. This is his son, and he is deeply concerned in the matter. Also, he loves Sarah, and also he loves Isaac, and so on. He doesn't want to see anybody hurt in the family. And as the text says in verse 11, the matter greatly distressed Abraham. All right, so here's a family situation that is difficult. It was not of Abraham's making. He was simply listening to his wife Sarah, trying to be congenial in the matter. And certainly he was rejoicing in the fact that God had at long last answered his prayers against all hope, and he had a direct son through Sarah. But here is a conflict within the family, and this is always hard. In family relationships, this is one of the hardest things to bear, where there's a conflict between people you love, and you love them both. It's not a case of either or. And what do you do in this situation where there's conflict in a family? Well, Abraham turned to God, and that is the answer for all such problems. Whatever problem we have, whether in the family or out of it, we should turn to God and ask him for help in the matter. In this case, God has very explicit directions. He says, listen to Sarah, your wife. Now, husbands, this is sometimes a bitter pill to swallow, especially when the division has been between you and your wife. But in this case, Sarah was entirely correct. That didn't make Abraham feel better. Such a situation rarely does. But this was the will of God. Sarah was right. Isaac was going to be the heir. Why? The great Messiah was coming through Isaac. There were no rivals. There was absolutely no possibility of anyone else having that right. It came through Isaac, and there was total agreement on that point. Well, here Sarah is asking for what is rightfully the part of her child and heir. And so he says to Abraham, don't be distressed about the matter. Listen to Sarah, your wife. She's right in this case. And do exactly that, because she is saying what is proper. And as far as Ishmael is concerned, don't be distressed. I have heard your prayers. I will take care of him. Now, here is one of the most revealing themes in all of Scripture about how God answers the prayers of a good man who belongs to God and who is seeking God's will and who is in a situation that he finds most distressing. He's there not because God is unmindful. He is there because God is faithful, and God is answering his prayers. And God is highly aware of exactly that situation that is so distressing Abraham. And Abraham plainly is seeking relief from God, and God tells him precisely what to do. In this case, listen to his wife. Now, the wife is not always right in such family problems, but in this particular case, Sarah was. And so here, God's answer is, you do exactly what she says because this is right. This is proper. So it's not a case that you just automatically listen to your wife because you're married to her, but in this case, her suggestion coincided with God's will, and her suggestion was definitely according to God's revelation. And Abraham is to listen and to promptly give that kind of obedience to God in the matter, which happens to coincide with his wife's wishes here. And concerning the difficulty that grieves him, Ishmael, well, he must put that into the hands of God too. God will take care of him. He is able to take care of everybody in a Christian family, not just certain ones. And where there's division of opinion or whatever, he can see to it that all are blessed and that all the needs are met and everyone is cared for. God does not intend any member of a Christian family to be slighted or to have it hard just because certain one is right and another one is wrong. He cares for the whole family. And so he cares for your family. And you can be sure of that. And as you face difficulties and struggle with situations, you can be sure that God intends blessing for every member of the family, that God intends His will to be accomplished in the life of the entire family. You can be sure of that. And we ought to have serene confidence in His ability to work out His will and to accomplish everything according to His purpose. We may not be able to see the answers to some of our prayers. We may not be able to figure it out properly. But that doesn't mean God doesn't see the solution. It doesn't mean that He is not able to work it all out. So we must make that a matter of persistent, determined prayer, that God will accomplish His perfect will, and that every member involved may be blessed, and that His will shall be accomplished for all the people that are involved. And all of us, as members of Christian families, must put that high on our list of priorities. So, verse 14, Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar, putting them on her shoulder, and gave her the boy and sent her away. And she departed and wandered about in the wilderness of Beersheba. Now, this looks like disaster for Hagar and Ishmael. But Abraham has heard God's will, and there's no argument about it. Abraham didn't do that. And when he heard God's will and understood that this was the purpose of the Almighty, he obeyed. Now, no ifs, buts, or maybes. He was obviously very concerned about the situation, but God had said, do this, and he does it without any equivocation, exactly as he should. And he sends them off into the wilderness of Beersheba. Now, that's a rough place to be in. You're talking about the south part of Palestine. This is right at the edge of the desert. Beersheba is about as far south as you can go without seeing nothing but rocks and dirt and so on from there on all the way to Africa. So here's a case where it's very difficult to survive. And if you don't know where the springs of water are and all that, you're in serious trouble. But that is what God wanted. So, verse 15. The water in the skin was used up, and she left the boy under one of the bushes, and she went and sat down opposite him, about a bow shot away, and said, do not let me see the boy die. And she sat opposite him, and lifted up her voice, and wept. So here she is, caught in a very difficult situation. She had obviously not wanted to see her son, Ishmael, get into trouble this way, or be excluded from the family, the way it turned out to be. But this is what happened. And here it looks absolutely hopeless. They're without water. They're in the middle of a barren desert. Where is there any resources, any place? Well, yes, right there. There's a tremendous resource because God is listening. And she lifts up her voice and wept. Yes, well, hopefully she prayed. But God was listening. And remember, God had promised Abraham that He was going to take care of the situation. So she should not have feared. But considering the situation, she obviously thought she had very good reason to fear. Death was a step away. But verse 17 says, and God heard the lad crying. Very interesting. He's listening to Ishmael, not just to Hagar. And he hears the cry of the lad. Maybe that is what he was working for. Maybe that is why all this happened. To convict Ishmael of the wrong that he had done and to bring him back to a recognition of the sin that he had committed against his father and the family that he was part of, and hence to bring him under conviction so that God could do something in response to him. Sometimes the hard things that happen in life are there for a definite purpose, to push God's people into a particular surrender, a particular dedication to God, which is important. Now, Ishmael, throughout his life, does not give great evidence of being a very pious person. But in this case, he definitely speaks to God, and God is listening, and God saves his life in answer to Abraham's prayers as well as Ishmael's prayers. And so, in verse 17, the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, what is the matter with you, Hagar? Do not fear, for God has heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad, and hold him by the hand, for I will make a great nation of him. Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. Now, the fulfillment was sitting there. Was it that they were so struck with the struggle of the journey and all that and the heat where they were that they couldn't see the well? It was right there. And all of a sudden, when Hagar looks, God lifts the veil, whatever is the problem for her, and she sees the well, the very thing that she had been begging for. It was sitting there. Was it there all along, and she just couldn't see it? Did God create a well there for her? Well, of course, Scripture doesn't tell us. But the important thing is, when she got her gaze focused on God and realized that God had a will in all these things and was fully able to do something about it, all of a sudden she could see. And there was the answer, staring her right in the face. Now, there's something convicting about that. There are occasions in our lives where we can think back where we were desperately concerned about something and we were begging God for it. And when we finally got to the point of surrender, whatever God's will is, whatever He wants, we want, all of a sudden we could see, and the answer was already sitting there. We didn't have to worry about it. And God works this way. Sometimes we forget, and we get so concerned, and we are struggling and grappling with the situation, not realizing that God has it all under control. He knows exactly what's going on. What we need to do is look with the eyes of faith on what God is doing and what His will is, and step forward and do exactly what His Word directs us to do. That is the answer. That always is the answer. And verse 20 says, God was with the lad, and he grew. And he lived in the wilderness and became an archer. And he lived in the wilderness of Paran. And his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. Now this is unusual in several things. He learned how to live in the wilderness. He adapted himself to a rugged climate where he was going to spend most of his life. And his mother secured a bride from Egypt, the land of highest culture in the Mideast. And obviously, this was not just a native person. This was a very civilized, highly educated bride. And so this was an expensive one in the language of the Mideast. This is something that was most unusual. And hence, he was also going to be the founder of a nation and the father of dukes or kings, what have you. So, God's prayers are going to be fulfilled here in the personage of Ishmael as he answers Abraham's petitions. Now, in the latter part of the chapter, beginning with verse 22, the text says, Now it came about at that time that Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, spoke to Abraham, saying, God is with you in all that you do. Now therefore swear to me here by God that you will not deal falsely with me, or with my offspring, or with my posterity, but according to the kindness that I have shown you, you shall show to me and to the land in which you have sojourned. And Abraham said, I swear. Now this is another very unusual circumstance. Here is Abimelech. Whether it is the exact same person that Abraham has had dealings with before, or whether this is his heir, this may be the very personage again. And Phicol, their relationship had not been too good farther on if this was the same person. But time had passed, and Abimelech had been watching. Now friends, this is a profound insight which is given to us here. This is not said just because of Abraham's benefit, but for all of us. Here's Abraham living in a hostile surrounding where he has sticky relationships, difficult relationships with his contemporaries. And some of them, like Abimelech, are definitely not God's people. They are very worldly people operating under a very different standard than what Abraham has. And they are watching him. Friends, I hope you understand this, that whoever you are and wherever you live, your neighbors, those people around you, those people who watch you at work, whatever, they're all watching you. Why? Because they know you're a Christian. And you're supposed to have a testimony. And they hope you won't. Because if they're not saved, they don't want you to have one. They want you to be just like they are, so they can sit back with satisfaction and say, yeah, these Christians are all the same, just like we are. That's what they hope for. And when they look and see instead someone who is dedicated to the Lord, someone who really does put God first, they're under conviction. Now, here's a Christian who lives it.
Here's a Christian who actually reverences God, and his life shows it. And so it says, God is with you in all that you do. Here's an unsaved man paying a tribute to Abraham. Is one of the highest things that it could be said about any person, anytime, anywhere. God is with you in all that you do. Whatever happened, Abraham did what pleased God. Whatever happened, Abraham was always submissive to God. He worshiped God all the time, no change, no matter what happened. God was first in his life, and everybody could see it. Friend, that's a convicting thought for us all. If they're watching us, what are they seeing? If the world is watching us day by day, what are they seeing? Now, we have to answer that very soberly. Our everyday way of spending our life must speak to the hearts of those who see us and know us. It is not just that you come to church on Sunday, and don't forget, they're watching that too. You play hooky from church and they're sitting over there sneering, laughing. They systematically may do it, but when you do it, oh, it's a source of great satisfaction. But they're watching you. And not just at church time. All the rest of the time, when things go wrong and your car won't start or whatever, they're watching how you take things. They're watching how you respond to the situation. You're supposed to be a Christian, and they hope you won't live it, because they certainly have no testimony. But when you live it, there's the message that they can't deny. Here's somebody who lives for God. In this wicked world, in this miserable circumstance that you're in, God is first. And they know that it ought to be so in their lives as well. So here's Abimelech coming back. He's changed his estimate of Abraham. Abraham is a great man. Abraham lives for God. There's no question in Abimelech's mind about that. He has watched. And Abraham has lived it. Now, he begs Abraham to deal kindly and justly with him and with his heirs after him. Because obviously Abraham is a powerful figure. He is in their standard, a sheikh of great power. And so he asks for favor, and Abraham swears it at once. He is going to be honorable. He is going to take care of Abimelech and his descendants. He will not take advantage of them. He gives them his word. And Abimelech knows his word counts. But now Abraham says, this is a two-way street. If I am going to look after you and your descendants, how about your looking after my descendants? And so, verse 25, Abraham complained to Abimelech because of the well of water which the servants of Abimelech had seized. So here, Abimelech's men were obviously unsaved men. They were out to get all they could. If it meant being unjust to others, well, so what? Winner take all. Now, Abimelech responds in verse 26, and he says, I do not know who has done this thing. Neither did you tell me, nor did I hear of it until today. So he's protesting here that he knows nothing about that, whether or not it's so, or who knows. But at any rate, he says, this is the first time you brought it up, and so he's prepared to do something about it. He'll respond. So, verse 27, Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two of them cut a covenant. That's the literal phrase in the Hebrew there. Cut a covenant. And Abraham set 7 ewe lambs of the flock by themselves. And Abimelech said to Abraham, what do these 7 ewe lambs mean, which you have set by themselves? And he said, you shall take these 7 ewe lambs from my hand, in order that it may be a witness to me that I dug this well. Therefore he called that place Beersheba, because there the two of them took an oath. So they made a covenant at Beersheba. Beersheba, the well of the oath, or of the covenant, or of the 7. Sheba may mean all those things. Beer is well. The well of the covenant, the well of the oath, the well of 7. 7 was a sacred number. We were bound by it. And so the two of them here make a compact with one another at Beersheba. And this oath that is taken is a very solemn one. Cutting a covenant means taking animal sacrifice and cutting the animal in two and putting them in a row and joining hands and walking between the pieces, the symbolic action, saying, if I violate this covenant, may I be dismembered like these carcasses are. A most solemn oath indeed. so they cut a covenant at Beersheba. Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, and arose and returned to the land of the Philistines. And Abraham planted a tamarisk tree at Beersheba, and there he called on the name of the Lord Jehovah, the everlasting God. And Abraham sojourned in the land of the Philistines for many days. Here he is in a hostile environment. The Philistines all about him, they were not a godly people. And here he is walking with God. And a new title is brought out for the Lord here. He is the everlasting God, El Olam. This is the first time, this is the first mention of that title of God here. Everlasting covenant has been mentioned back in Genesis 17. God keeps that covenant. To have an everlasting covenant, one of the parties at any rate has to be everlasting. So this is a normal title here. And he called on the name of Jehovah, the everlasting God. Yes, we serve a God who is not a temporary figure. He is a permanent inhabitant of the universe. He transcends the universe. He is the greatest single being that has ever existed. And we have the privilege of serving him, the everlasting God. Abraham valued that tremendously. For Abraham, this was his life, serving God, walking with God, pleasing God. This is what life was all about for him. And everyone could recognize that God was with him. He plants a tamarisk tree, a variety like an oak tree, in that land, a big tree. And that was a way of saying that this was a very important place. This was a place where God had dealt with him. And so a tree is planted there that would last, no doubt, for centuries. And he called on the name of the Lord. He devoted himself even more seriously to living for God. He devoted himself more seriously in prayer to that God and worshiping the everlasting God, the one true God that exists. Now, friends, there's something about this that speaks to our hearts, because we are living in a very wicked world. We're living in a country that is far from God. People in our own state who want to gamble, according to the discussion about the voting for that, 80% of the vote was for the gambling. Most of our surrounding neighbors are individuals who don't believe the Bible, don't take it seriously. We're living in this hostile environment, and we too must walk with God. We too must so live that when they look at us, they can tell that the everlasting God is our God. And we mean business about it. And we are going to serve him whatever the cost. And we are going to obey whether anybody else in the world does or not. Now, that kind of dedication was the dedication that Abraham had. And that blessed testimony, after 4,000 years, is still impressive. It touches our hearts that here is a man for whom God was everything. And his life was such that everybody who knew him could tell that his God was everything. Friends, we need that testimony. In our own generation and this wicked world we live in, we too must be so devoted to God that everyone who looks at us can tell that we belong to Jesus. And that our God is the everlasting God who rules all things, and who shall indeed keep every promise and bring every child of his safely home. Every head bowed, every eye closed. O Lord, forgive us that we fail to be the kind of testimonies that we ought to be. Forgive us that we often hide from the view of the world our devotion to thee. Forgive us. Help us, Lord, that we may have the boldness of standing for thee and speaking for thee and being a witness to others for thee, that thou mayest be pleased and that all who know us will have all doubts removed as to who our God is. Give us courage. Give us faithfulness. Give us the boldness that we may stand for Thee in this wicked generation and not be ashamed of Thee and not decline to speak out, but give us instead that testimony for Thee of a holy life and a clear testimony for Jesus that will speak to the hearts of all who know us. Help us, Lord, that our life may count for Thee, for Jesus' sake. Amen.